You won.
I was an Army brat, and I served in the Army myself, both as an enlisted soldier and as an officer. I served in the Middle East. I served in Korea. And yet, none of it was as harrowing, as perilous, as wearying as the fight every day to push down, to keep inside the person that I knew that I was. That I knew in my heart of hearts that I was, and that I knew that I needed to become. I built a life of lies for myself. The difference between the two is the difference between life and death.
All right, hey everybody, how you doing? Wow, we got a heck of a show lined up for you tonight. Fiona Dawson, who is the host and producer of Trans Military, a new web series that is going to be coming your way very soon. I believe next month or shortly thereafter. We're going to have her on. We're going to talk about trans in the military. This is something that, even though with all the Bradley Manning stuff going on, haven't gotten a lot of coverage, or at least not a lot of coverage on this show. And it's time. I mean, it's overdue. It really is. And I call myself out on that one. This is an issue that needs to get more coverage. People like me should be doing it, and we haven't been. And that's our fault. And we're going to try to help rectify that a little bit tonight. Fiona Dawson will be with us after the bottom of the hour, so stick around for that. That's going to be great. And we've also got plenty of other stuff to talk about. Let's see. What do we want to start with tonight, Mr. Mike? So many good stories.
Choices,
so many good
choices. Look at all that stuff there. There's just content
well,
and more content.
Okay. I think tonight we are going to start with the Cory Booker story. Now, for those of you who don't know, those of you in other parts of the country, I, as you may know, live here in the state of New Jersey, where, of course, we have got a Senate race. In fact, we just got our mail-in ballots today for this Senate race. Yeah, it's amazing. You know, we do mail-in voting here in New Jersey.
Oh, they'll fix that. Don't worry about that. They'll get rid of that just as soon as they can.
Oh, no, they won't, because we have a New Jersey, we have a Democratic legislature. Oh, Christie ain't goodness. Getting away with that shit in this state.
Thank God.
No.
Here in Arizona, we have voting centers, and they're trying to get rid of mail voting, which is really...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's amazing. We have mail voting here. We send in our ballots. Mm-hmm. They're counted. We never have a problem. And, you know, isn't it amazing? We have no problem whatsoever with voter fraud. No discernible problem. No one has ever reported an issue, at least not that I've seen. And I usually read the local news sources. I have never seen a report of voter fraud in this state. And yet we have early voting. We have mail-in voting. We have all this stuff. And, you know, the entire democratic system does not collapse around us. We don't have massive voter fraud. You know, it's just people exercising their constitutionally granted rights to vote in an easy to deal with manner. And amazingly, you know, the world does not collapse. So, in any case, we have this election that's going on right now. On the Democratic side, you may have heard, this is to replace the late Frank Lautenberg, a longtime senator. Served for many years, then he retired, and then they got this other guy, Robert Torricelli, who was also a Democrat, but of course he was also a corrupt asshole who wound up in jail for taking bribes. And so it was a last-minute election, and Lautenberg came out of retirement and wound up filling in that term, and... you know, and he was a good senator, but the man was a bazillion years old. I mean, he was into his 90s, and he recently passed away while in office, which, you know, frankly, and I mean, I hate to speak ill of the dead here. I really do, because I honor Frank Lautenberg. I think he was a great senator. But, you know, you reach a point where it's like the guy just needed to retire. I mean, it was like most of the time he was in office over the last year, he was out because of health issues. And you know, I'm not saying he's not a good man. I'm not saying you should discriminate against him because he's old. I'm saying you should discriminate against him because he couldn't get there to do the job, and he physically wasn't present to legislate. That's the problem I have. Okay, and eventually the man passed away, you know, with honors, and he was celebrated as he should be. And now we need to replace him. So there's this special election. Of course, Chris Christie's up for election here in November, the normal time that we do elections here. But, of course, Chris Christie didn't want Cory Booker on the ballot because he's terrified of Cory Booker. Uh-huh. He's more popular than he is. So because of that, now we're having this special election like 3 weeks before the regular election, you know, because, you know, after all, we have tons and tons of money here in New Jersey, and we can just afford to piss it all away on extra elections that we don't really need, right? But all right, I'm going off track here. But you know what I'm saying. That's just Chris Christie. But in any case, so we have this election. We just got our mail-in ballots today. And it's between Cory Booker, mayor of Newark, very progressive guy, very LGBT supportive, very engaged. You may have heard the stories about him going out there with a snow shovel, helping people shovel snow, getting stuff needed, prescriptions and other, you know, helping people even like fix potholes and things. You know, the guy is a real hands-on kind of leader. And I think he'll be an awesome senator. But the guy that they have going up against him is probably the most right-wing wackadoodle the state of New Jersey has produced. And we've produced quite a few, believe me. Okay? Yes. But this guy really takes the cake. Okay? Former mayor of Bogota, New Jersey, this tiny little town of 8,000, a little bit north of here. And he's a Tea Party guy. He's a right-winger. Well, he made some really, frankly, bigoted, nasty comments about Cory Booker that inferred that he was gay. And I thought it's a smear.
He's doing a smear.
It really was. It really was. It was nothing short of a smear. But before we play how Booker responded, which I think was awesome, take a listen to what Lonergan spewed out here on a local conservative radio show.
It's kind of weird. As a guy, I personally like being a guy. I mean, you know, this is, I don't know if you saw the stories last year. They've been out for quite a bit about how he likes to go out at 3 o'clock in the morning for a manicure and a pedicure.
No, I never saw that one. Where yeah, in Newark? What's open in Newark?
We were looking. We couldn't find a 24-hour manicure pedicure in Newark. We did find, there's lots and lots of stories about it. It was all over the
place. So do you think he's gay?
I don't know. I don't know.
Do you think he's playing a game here, trying to leave that ambiguous on purpose?
Well, maybe that helps to get him the gay vote by acting ambiguous. I can't address, although I don't like going out in the middle of the night or any time of the day for a manicure and pedicure. It was described as his peculiar fetish is how it was described. I have a more peculiar fetish. I like a good scotch and a cigar.
This guy is such an idiot. I want to direct your attention, because this is the show that it is, I want to direct your attention to one of his first comments. It's like, I like being a guy. Okay, so wait a minute. What is he saying there exactly? That if you're gay, you're not a guy?
Real men don't have manicures in the middle of the
Well,
night.
Is he like confusing the transsexuals with the gays? You know, if you're gay, then that means you have to like wear a dress and heels. What exactly is he trying to communicate? I mean, it's so beyond stupidity that it would be more offensive if it wasn't so laughable. But what was really awesome, what was really incredible, what was really great, was Cory Booker's response to this. He was on HuffPost Live, I think it was yesterday or the day before, and he came up with a great response to this, and I want to play that. Let's run that, Mr. Mike.
That kind of callous, bigoted disrespect to gays and lesbians is not, it shouldn't be tolerated. And again, the thought that what defines manhood is the drink that you drink or the cigar that you smoke. I think that he just really misses the boat on what it means to be a man in America, and what true, in my opinion, as my father taught me, what true manhood is about, which is really about the kindness of your heart, the content of your character, the courage of your spirit, and how you treat others and what you do for others as you walk the path of life.
Awesome.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, how much more could you? I mean, this. You know, what I love about Cory Booker, and I hate to sound like I'm gushing here, because, you know, you try to be, you know, I mean, I don't make any, I'm not fooling anybody if I try and convince anybody that I'm, you know, an objective journalist. I'm not, okay? I'm a liberal through and through. Everybody knows that, okay? I'm not trying to convince anybody that I am somehow unbiased, objective. I'm not. It's not what I am, okay? And anybody who knows me, anybody who listens to the show, anybody who reads my work knows that. So I'm not fooling anybody here, okay? I am a dyed-in-the-wool liberal. I think Cory Booker is awesome. But, you know, it's not just because I like his politics, and I do. It's because he lives his politics. I mean, he doesn't just, you know, how many of these guys, you know, you think about your politicians in Washington, and I'm talking across the board here. I am not talking about all Republicans. I'm not talking about all Democrats. I'm talking across the board here, politicians, federal politicians in Washington. Okay, how many of these guys really live their rhetoric? I mean, you hear them all the time. How many times, oh, I support workplace rights for transgender people. I support gay marriage. I support the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. I support the... But when you really need them to stand up and put those values into action, where are they? That's the problem. Okay? Yeah, we got the Employment Non-Discrimination Act through Congress this year, through the Senate House, the HELP Committee. Okay? And now Harry Reid is saying it might come up sometime in the fall. He's not sure, but maybe soon, and we'll, you know, when the stars align and the planetary, I don't know. It's like they say one thing. Like, you know, that guy at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, remember that guy? You know, the one who campaigned on support for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act? The guy who promised in a questionnaire before the election that he would support signing a federal order to protect LGBT federal employees. You remember that guy? You know, that guy, you know, the guy in the White House? Yeah, that guy. You know, say one thing, do another, okay? I mean, everybody complains about how the Republicans, they campaign on these things, and then they go and all they want to do is abortion, 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 anti-gay, vote suppression, abortion, abortion, vote suppression, abortion. You know, but the reality is, unfortunately, the Democrats really don't have that much better of a track record. It's just in the opposite direction. End. Oh, wait, no. We really meant don't ask, don't tell. Oh, wait. We really meant hate crimes. Oh, wait. Somebody over here on the far left that we can't tell you who they are said we'd prefer that you do these things first. But we won't tell you who they are because, of course, the fact that everybody knows it's the Human Rights Campaign doesn't really matter. We're not going to tell you that because, well, you know, then it would inconvenience somebody rich and we can't have that. I mean, really, you know, it's... That's the problem. You know, the Democrats would be so much better if they weren't such hypocrites. If they didn't engage in the same kind of bullshit that they call out the Republicans for. This is what makes me crazy about Democrats and Republicans. Is that too often you can't tell the difference. But anyway, so I wanted to start off with that because I think this is it was an important story. It just goes to show you that literally anybody can get on a ballot these days. I mean, it's obvious to me. Cory Booker is going to be our next senator. I know it. You know it. Chris Christie knows it. And the New Jersey Republican Party knows it. Which is why Steve Lonergan, who is, I am telling you, a statewide joke in this state, Okay, the guy runs every single election for every single statewide office. He ran for governor against Chris Christie, got blown out in the primary, ran for senator back when, I forget what year, got blown out in the primary. You know, every time it's the same deal with this guy. He runs, he's one of the candidates, he gets blown out in the primary every time. The only reason he's the candidate this time is because nobody else wanted to run. Because everybody is like, why am I going to waste my time and my money running against the most popular Democrat in the state? What is the point? And basically, Booker is going to just kind of stroll right into office. Okay? And you know, I've said this before. I've said this before. Personally, if I had my druthers, I would have rather seen Cory Booker run for against Chris Christie for governor. Because he is the only Democrat in the state who has a chance of beating him. That's why. Because I want, even more than I want Cory Booker as senator, there's plenty of good Democrats. I would have been happy with Frank Pallone or Rush Holt as the senator if I could have Cory Booker as governor. Honestly. Because I think Cory Booker would be an awesome governor. And he wouldn't be destroying families and cutting police forces and fucking up our already polluted skies and making it easier for companies to pollute like Chris Christie is. Okay, I think Barbara Bono, the current challenger to Christie, I think she's great. I think she's a wonderful woman. She has a great record. I also, unfortunately, as much as it pains me to say this, I don't think she has the slightest chance in hell of becoming governor because nobody knows who she is. I mean, this is a woman. Okay, I know who she is because she used to be my state senator back when, before they redistricted. I know her. Her campaign headquarters is less than 10 miles from my house. She's a wonderful woman. I met her when I was in California, Netroots Nation. She's terrific. I absolutely, positively will be voting for her. But the problem is Chris Christie has been very slick, and he's built himself a nice little lead, okay? Making nice with Obama over Sandy was a smart move on his part. And even so-called Democratic supporters, guys like George Soros and these other so-called liberals, are backing this guy. They're backing Chris Christie. Which to me is a disgrace. I think you have to turn in your liberal card if you do that. Because when you start backing hard right wingers, you know what you're saying? You say, well, Christie's he's really a moderate. No, he's not. Okay? Because what you're saying when you give money to Chris Christie's, you're saying, I don't care about gay marriage. I don't care about the poor. I don't care about keeping properly staffed police forces. I don't care about our schools. I don't care about the pollution in our state. Every time that you give a nickel to Chris Christie, that's what you are saying. But, you know, these guys, they all want to flock. They want to be around a winner, you know, and Chris Christie is going to be a winner. So, you know, why not just be a traitor and switch sides? Because, you know, after all, that's where the money is, right? It's pathetic. Pathetic. It bothers me. It bothers me a lot. You know, because who are they going to back next time? Unless you decide you don't like you're a Democrat. You know, oh, I'm a Democrat. Unless I decide I like the Republican more. What the hell kind of Democrat are you? What the hell kind of liberal are you? Get the hell out of here, okay? Call yourself whatever you want, but you sure as hell are no progressive, that's for sure. I mean, unless your idea of progress is what Christie is offering, I don't think so. I don't think you get to call yourself a progressive in that case. Oh, boy, now that I've gone off on a tangent for several minutes, all right. Well, you know, I mean, New Jersey politics. Well, here's a little interesting thing. We only got a couple more minutes, but I'll cover this very quickly. Maybe we'll come back to it later after Fiona Dawson. Chelsea Manning apparently was making noise that she was considering gender transition long before she announced this publicly. Now, we knew this in the community, that we had heard that she wanted to be called Brianna at one point, you know, and she, I guess, hadn't figured out what name she wanted. But, you know, this was not news, you know. I mean, we knew in the community, we had been hearing these things. But, of course, you know, nobody believes a trans person, so nobody bothered to cover it. You know, the fact that there's just, after all, it was only, you know, her own statements, but, you know, because it came through our media, well, then it's not worth anything. Well, you know, once it's picked up by MSNBC and New York Times, well, then all of a sudden it's credible, you know, because nothing credible can possibly come through, you know, the people who are actually directly concerned, but, you know. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm just... But in any case, apparently... There was an email sent to a leading Don't Ask, Don't Tell researcher. I believe it was Nathaniel Frank, who wrote a book on that topic. And Manning actually wrote to Frank and said, I'm doing a little research. I have questions regarding transgender people in the U.S. military. What laws, policies bar service members from seeking name changes, birth certificate changes, hormone replacement therapy, etc.? What changes would be required for these policies to feasibly allow a soldier to transition in the military? That email apparently came a few days after Manning sent the non-commissioned officer in charge of discipline in her Army Intelligence Unit an anguished note entitled My Problem and an image of her dressed as a woman. You know. So, I mean, this is not news. This was a known thing. Now, here's my question. We don't have a lot of time because we've got Fiona coming up in a couple of minutes, but let me just pose this question to you. If this was a known thing, if the United States military knew that this was a person who was dealing with gender identity issues, and of course, at this time, we know that this is a reason to separate you, that you're a known trans person, you get thrown out of the military, right? Well, they knew she was still in there. Plus, all the problems that she had with mental stability. We heard stories about her being lying on the floor with a knife, having chopped up seat cushions. We talked about that last show. I mean, what do you need? Do you need, like, something to explode before you say, hey, maybe there's a problem here? Where is the United States military's responsibility? Where is the level of responsibility that the United States military takes when you get all these clues, all these things that were made known, that were known by the United States military before any of the WikiLeaks stuff was released, and the military did nothing? Where is the level of responsibility there on the part of the United States military for this? And by the way, this is not, I am not trying to argue that Manning should be absolved, that she shouldn't get at least some punishment. I think, frankly, 35 years is a bit excessive, but I'm not saying she should have gone without punishment at all. But where is the United States military's responsibility here? That's what I want to know. Because I really believe that I really believe that they have not given us any kind of, they've not allowed for that. All right, and we are going to go to a break, and then we will be back with Fiona Dawson. Our song is from our good friend DJ Joanne Lynn, and her track is from Joanne's Rose called Hit. We'll be back with Fiona Dawson in a couple of minutes.
Oh, one.
I'm Fiona Dawson, your host for Transmilitary, a new media series sharing the reality of transgender military lives. These heroes, heroines, and all in between face stigma and discrimination simply because, like all military personnel, they want to serve the country they love.
We are back. It is the Rebecca Giro Show. Thanks for sticking around. And we've got Fiona Dawson online. Fiona, are you there?
Hey, Becky. Yes, I am.
Oh, great. I'm so excited to have you on to talk about this because this is such an important topic. But before we get into transmilitary, I wonder if you'll talk a little bit about you may not be a name that's familiar to a lot of our listeners. Talk a little bit about yourself. What do you do and how did you get involved with the topic of trans people in the military?
Well, Becky, thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. I got involved essentially because this is the type of work that I'm absolutely passionate about. All my life, I have been involved in different human equality projects and endeavors. I've loved volunteering. I've loved raising money for nonprofits. And it was 2004 that I came out as lesbian and really kind of threw myself into LGBT work. Over the years, I just grew in my enthusiasm for being an advocate for our transgender brothers, sisters, and those in between. I really feel that this is a voice that needs to be heard much louder, and I realized that I had a place where I could do that. And then, of course, becoming really good friends with Alison Robinson, I just got more and more involved in the work. And we started working on this project along with Bryn Tannehill and some other leaders about a year ago. So it's amazing how the timing has come to this point where we've just released our reel right at the point where we've got some pretty prominent figures coming out as transgender in America.
Right, exactly. And I was going to ask you, because there's been so much coverage about the Chelsea Manning case. It seems like there may be a lot of people who don't really understand what the situation is. It might be convinced that the Chelsea Manning situation is a singular thing, that this doesn't happen. But the reality is there are a lot of trans people who are and have served in the United States military, aren't there?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think Chelsea Manning coming out gives us an opportunity to raise the dialogue to a larger platform and reach a mainstream audience. But one thing that we must not forget is that there are thousands of transgender people estimated to be currently serving in our armed forces. And these are people who are serving with honor and distinction. They're really great at their jobs. And the policies that are preventing them are really outdated and obsolete. And here's an opportunity for us to demonstrate that our military needs to recruit and retain the best and brightest that America has to offer, and we know that there are thousands of people that are transgender and should be allowed to serve in this way.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I wanted to point out is that you interview a lot of people in this. Now, we saw there's an 8-minute trailer that's available. I've linked it on Facebook, so anybody who wants to take a look at that trailer, find me on Facebook. It's unlinked by the show promo. One of the things in there that really struck me is that you interviewed, among many others, is a trans person who is actually serving right now, Bryce Salato. I want to play a clip of Bryce talking about his situation. Mike, can you run that?
Getting discharged would be hard, it'd be rough, but I've kind of come to accept that it's a very real possibility. And because I do choose to live my life very openly, I've always knew that it was a possibility.
What is it about the military
that makes people give up so much to serve?
I think for a lot of folks, and this was true for me, just being part of something bigger than yourself, being part of something that, you know, not many people have been a part of or can say they have been a part of, and wanting to, you know, do something more than go to college and have a typical career, or, you know, using the military to go to college and have a better career. So I really think just the growth opportunities that you have, the opportunities to meet friends you'll never, you know, you'll never lose. You'll always be brothers and sisters in arms.
Yeah. You know, I see, I hear something like that. And you know, on top of the courage that it takes, in, at least in my opinion, for someone to come out and say, even though I am legally prohibited, I want to fight for my right to lay down my life to my, for my country, even though, I mean, what that says about any individual who is willing to do that on behalf of their country, this is somebody who is actually putting their career on the line to appear in this feature, isn't he?
Yes, he absolutely is. Bryce is spectacular, and he really does represent, as I say, thousands estimated of transgender people who are currently serving. Right now, in our project development, we are securing the funding that we need to be able to go on and produce the six-part series. And so we've produced this reel here at Martian Entertainment to be able to demonstrate a taste of more of the stories that we want to share. We are in the process of identifying three people who are actively serving who, like Bryce, are also willing to lose their jobs to be able to get their story out there. And we want to contrast them with three people who are also actively serving but in the United Kingdom's forces. Because there are 11 countries worldwide that actually allow transgender people to serve in their military. And these are people that are being deployed along with, you know, all of their other units and just serving side by side with their cisgender counterparts. And so by contrasting with the United Kingdom and with these other countries, we want to demonstrate that transgender people are perfectly capable of serving effectively in the armed forces. And so we feel like this stark comparison is really going to send a message and also hopefully reach mainstream Americans.
I'll tell you, one of the things that's always really surprised and amazed me is that we have such an issue with this here, but we talk about countries like Israel, countries like the United Kingdom. I remember we covered a story here on the show where there was actually a transgender pilot, a pilot who transitioned from man to woman in Prince William's regiment. And they did all kinds of media coverage, and the reaction on the part of this pilot's fellow soldiers was just like, you know, she was a great pilot as a man, and now she's a great pilot as a woman. So what? Who cares? And I'm wondering, you know, maybe you're somebody is there a difference in American culture versus British culture that makes this so much more of a sticky issue in the United States than it does in England?
That's a really interesting question, Becky, and I believe that you're referring to Isla Holden, who I'm actually in communication with. She's helping us with the development of this project and helping us identify some more UK service members. I actually have not lived in the UK since 1998. I know that my accent is still pretty strong, and so I've lived most of my adult life and career here in the United States, so my culture has become Americanized. I think what's so interesting is that transgender people have been able to serve since 1999 in the UK, which is before lesbian, gay, and bisexual people could openly serve. And so I think that that is interesting in itself. And I think there's lots of questions that come up about this that we want to discover and find answers to by producing trans military. For me, on my personal level, I think that one of the stark comparisons comes up with healthcare. In the United Kingdom, we have the National Health Service, and so all citizens of the UK receive free healthcare. And so healthcare is not dependent upon your job, and it's not dependent upon your relationship status, and it's not dependent upon your gender identity. And I think that as a society and as a culture, I really feel that that affects a lot of attitudes, because questions that come up here in the U.S. when it comes to access to healthcare don't come up as quickly, or perhaps never come up, in the U.K. And so I think that maybe that has something to do with lending it to the society being a bit more accepting within the military. But I am hoping to actually delve into that deeper over the next coming months as we go into production for Transmilitary. And so when we release the series next spring, I can give you some more answers to that question.
Okay, that sounds terrific. Now, I know we have one more clip from Allison Robinson. Mr. Mike, why don't we run that one? We'll talk about it on the other side.
I'm Allison Robinson. I'm a 1994 graduate of West Point, and I served in the Army in Germany and the Middle East and in Korea.
What is the situation like today for trans people in the military?
Well, it's actually even worse than don't ask, don't tell. Anyone whose gender presentation doesn't match up with what the chain of command imagines that it should be, or that colleagues imagine that it should be, runs the risk of being interrogated in this way.
Why is this project so important?
Well, it's critically important, Fiona, and it's important right now in this early phase of the fight for a transgender service. In the same way that it was important for Americans to see images and to hear the voices of gay and lesbian service members early in the fight to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Seeing us, hearing our stories, it changes the equation for many people.
Wow. I think Allison is making some excellent points, but, you know, one of the things that from my perspective, and granted, I have never served in the United States military, I've never worked with any of these organizations personally, but we know that Allison Robinson recently left an organization of which she was executive director, the OSSLDN organization, which there's kind of a questionable status right now, but one of the things that we've noticed here in the United States is that after the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it seems like the funding and the interest in protecting trans people from the same kind of discrimination that was eliminated when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, for the most part, evaporated. And that there doesn't seem to be a lot of attention until this particular project seems to come up and shine a light. I mean, we do have a new organization that's just getting its feet wet, Sparta. But, you know, that's a very, very recent development within the last several weeks, in fact. Is it your hope that this is going to help spur the national conversation, maybe get President Obama or the Congress to do something here?
I absolutely do hope and feel that this will spur more conversation. I think that what we have found with the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, a lot, even within the LGBT community, people didn't realize that Don't Ask, Don't Tell never protected transgender people, and its repeal does not allow them to serve openly. So I think that we're finding many different things happening. I think, first of all, internally, more transgender people who are active right now are kind of building up more courage to actually come out. And they're tired of not having the protections that they need. And so I think that we're seeing a great opportunity to be able to share their stories. When it comes to how we change the situation, it's not actually a law that needs to change. Don't Ask, Don't Tell was a law, and it was a very different situation. What prevents people today from serving openly as transgender are a set of policies, and really that's the Pentagon can make the difference in that. It's medical policies that need to change, and so we don't need to go begging President Obama to do something about this necessarily, but I think that by elevating the dialogue within the country and creating more awareness amongst mainstream Americans of the situation, that we'll be able to get the attention of the 12 or so people who can make the difference and can change these policies.
Gotcha. Okay, now before we let you go, I know that this is a work in progress, that you're going to be releasing it, as you said, next year. Is that right?
Yeah, we're releasing it next year. What we're doing right now is actually working to get the full funding that we need. We're very confident that that will happen. I will say, if any listeners are moved to help us secure the funding, then please don't hesitate to reach out and contact us. We have a Facebook page, which is a great way to just find one of us. It's Support Trans Military on Facebook. Please like us and send us a message, and we will very promptly get back with you. You can also follow us on Twitter with the handle @transmilitary. We can, and if people want to see the reel, it's bit.ly.com/transmilitary, which is all lowercase. And thank you, Betty, for posting it on your wall as well.
Oh, it's no problem. I am thrilled. It's about time. This is a topic that I think is long overdue. And frankly, I do think President Obama could help, because he is the commander in chief of the military. I mean, really, he could make this go away with his signature.
Maybe he can talk really to his buddies, you know, and have that.
Well, you know, he's not exactly been as aggressive as we had hoped, shall we say, on these things. But is there anything else that you think should listeners know about this going forward? Are we going to see more coverage and more clips from this as you progress and put this together?
Yes, you absolutely will. So please, you know, we're going to be using social media as a large platform to get this messaging out. I want listeners to know that my team and I are absolutely passionate about this topic, and we've been working on it for coming on a year. And so you have to know that we are going to make this happen, and we are going to get onto the largest loudest platform to advocate for transgender equality, specifically in the military here. And we hope that this dialogue will then transfer over into other employment issues. Given that the military is America's largest employer, we hope that it can also lend weight to a fully inclusive Employment Non-Discrimination Act and other issues that relate to the transgender community. So I want your listeners to know that we are right there. And I may not be able to carry a gun, but I'm going to go into the trenches and fight like hell for equality.
There you go. I can't carry a gun either. They scare the hell out of me. Anyway, Fiona, thank you so much for joining us. This was terrific. I hope you'll come back again and join us as we get closer, and we can promote this some more and make sure that people know about it and participate and all that good stuff.
It would be an absolute pleasure. Thank you for all you're doing, Becky. Thank you.
Absolutely. Have a good night.
And you take care.
That was Fiona Dawson, the producer and host of Transmilitary. Isn't she great? I mean, she's awesome. I think this is an awesome project. If you've got the money, seriously, if you can drop them a few bucks, help out, help get this thing made. I'm telling you, if my endorsement means anything to you, granted, okay, I'm no big shot here, but if my endorsement means anything to you, go give these people some money if you can. If you've got it to give, I encourage you to do so. And we will be, we will definitely be following this story, because this is awesome. And we're still working on getting Allison Robinson to join us, because I really want to have her on the show one of these days. You know, it used to be that I never would say that people whose guest I was trying to get the guest on the show, because I always had this like superstition that if I talked about it on the show, I would jinx it. But, well, I know
that jinx. Sometimes that works okay, and sometimes it's a real bad problem.
I've allowed myself the conceit of thinking of them well known enough now that like, hopefully just mentioning a person's name on the air isn't going to screw up my chances to, like, have them on. So I'm just, you know, oh my goodness. So people on Facebook who are, like, people I've never known, and people I don't know, and I have no idea if they're listening to the show or not, are, you know, contacting me on Facebook. And I'm never sure if, like, they're contacting me because we're live on the air and they want to talk, in which case this person, if they are, they should send me a message that tells them they're listening to the show instead of just going, hi. You know, I mean, I don't know what that means, you know? I mean, for all I know, it could be somebody who's, like, trying to, like, you know, pick me up. I mean, wouldn't be the first time that's happened on Facebook, I will tell you. We've actually done a few. We've had a few interesting conversations along those lines. But, you know, I'll tell you, I am a huge supporter of this because, and I want to talk a little bit about why. Not just because it has great people, not just because I'm confident with somebody like Fiona doing this, with people like Allison Robinson and Bryce being involved. You know, that of course makes me confident that it's going to be well done and that it's going to be the important stuff is going to get covered and that people will learn what they need to learn and all that good stuff. But I mean, even more basically, let's not forget that who we're talking about here. We are talking about people who are fighting for the right to lay down their lives for our country. This is what they're fighting for. They are fighting for the right to pick up a gun and defend us. I mean, my God, people, can't we get our shit together on this, if nothing else? I mean, okay, maybe you don't want a transgender person to marry your daughter, but don't you at least think that you could leave her alone enough to serve her country with honor as she is or he is, as they are, as with their whole selves? Can't you give someone who is making that level of sacrifice that much, just that much, to say, we honor your sacrifice. We honor the fact that you are willing to pick up a gun, or whether actually or figuratively, in other words, to help someone else pick up a gun, whatever, whatever they do within the United States military to help the cause. I mean, I'm using pick up a gun metaphorically. But if for somebody who is making that level of sacrifice in their own personal lives to do that, to make that kind of a sacrifice on behalf of you and on behalf of every other American who, like myself, like Mr. Mike, like most of us, don't go and do that and take those risks and go out and fight these fights. The people who go out there and fight these fights so that we don't have to, can't we honor their sacrifice and their courage and their willingness to do that enough so that we would at least say, you know what? You say you're a man, you say you're a woman, good enough for us. Get out there. And we will honor you and your sacrifice as much as anyone else in your unit or your battalion or whatever. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm not good with military terms. I'm not a military person, so forgive me if I'm mangling that stuff up. But I mean, it goes down to the basic thing. Don't these people at minimum deserve that basic respect? I mean, I can't think of a greater sacrifice that one individual can make for their country than to put themselves in harm's way. Honestly, to say, I am going to fight for your freedom because that's what I feel called to do. And because, I mean, nobody is saying that you have to like anything. Nobody is saying you have to be okay with them marrying your child or, I mean, none of that stuff. But can't you at least give them the simple human respect of saying, you say that you are this person, this is who you are, this is how you live your life, and you want to serve our military, you want to fight, help defend our country, good for you, go to it. Is there really that big of a deal? I mean, because, come on, we've been through this before. okay? Remember John McCain saying, oh, yeah, people are going to die if Don't Ask, Don't Tell is repealed. Remember that? You remember that?
I do.
Yeah. People are going to die, and you know, and then there were the right-wing wackadoodles who were saying there's going to be rapes and foxholes and all that. None of that crap happened. Everybody knows it's all bullshit. It was bullshit then, and it's bullshit now. Honestly. Honestly. I mean, aren't we mature enough as a country to get over this stuff? To get past that, to respect and honor the sacrifice these people are making on our behalf. And don't sweat the small shit, which is what this is. I mean, really, man, woman, okay? You know, it used to be, oh, well, you know, it would cause problems. I mean, we got women fighting on the front lines now. Okay, so don't give me that gender nonsense anymore. Men and women have the same access to the same jobs in the United States military now. I mean, maybe not 100%, but it might as well be. Okay, so if you can go that far, if you can make the access to positions in the front lines and all the different positions in the United States military open to both genders, why can't you make it open to all genders? I mean, you know, countries like the UK, like Israel, who just, in fact, inducted their first transitioning male-to-female soldier just the other day. They have had other transsexuals in the military, but I don't think they've actually had someone who was in the transition process before. But there's like, as Fiona was telling us, there's like 11 different countries. The last time I heard it was 10. There must have been another one added. You know, and you don't hear any problems with those folks, right? I mean, I know, we didn't get a chance to mention this while Fiona was on, but I know that pilot in Prince William's regiment was at the wedding of William and Kate. I mean, these are comrades in arms, and certainly William didn't have a problem with it. And certainly the royal family didn't have a problem with it. And certainly his own or her own comrades in arms, and whatever they are, battalion or I don't know, whatever military unit they're in. Forgive me, again, military idiot here. But, I mean, these are people, they respect each other for what they do, for the work that they do, not because they do or don't do fulfill some nebulous status of, you know, I mean, come on. All right. Anyway, we got to go to a break before I burst a blood vessel. Whoa. We have got, who is it?
Jenny.
Jenny. Jenny Slater. Jenny Slater. Oh So Strange. Okay. We will have Oh So Strange by Jenny, and I will be back, and we will be back in about 5, gang.
A little something just to lift them up and look out. You end up hanging out with the stoned out intellectuals. Maybe I could be just like them.
We're talking about some real sick stuff here. Man on man, hairy baby, BDSM, bottoms acting like tops, tops acting like bottoms. It's just the whole world gone topsy-turvy.
You won.
One of the biggest upsides from those two Supreme Court decisions is the impact that this will have on LGBT youth across the country. Every day, LGBT youth are sent a message that they are less than, that they are not equal to their straight counterparts. So for the first time, this Supreme Court has sent a very affirming message to LGBT youth that they are part of American society, that they are as constructive a part of our society as anyone else. Imagine the power that that has to a gay or a transgender youth sitting in, say, Mississippi. For the very first time, they may very well have received the message from the highest levels of the United States government that they are, in fact, no different than their straight counterparts. That is incredibly impactful and positive.
All right, we're back, and thanks for sticking around. Now, that was, I know the music was a little bit loud on that. That in the background there was Fred Sains from the Human Rights Campaign talking about the impact that the decision on marriage, the Supreme Court decision on marriage, has on youth. And basically his argument is that, well, you know, because of this, it makes them feel like... you know, they're being treated as equals and stuff. And you know, I'll tell you, that's okay as far as it goes. But, you know, I tell you, every time I hear one of these people, and whether it's Fred Sains or somebody else from that crowd, you know, saying, you know, marriage equals equality. I say, in a heartfelt and honest and not in an offensive way, not in an offended way, not in a... But in an honest and heartfelt way, I say, bullshit! Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit! I say, what is the real message that you are sending to LGBT youth when you have marriage in a situation where if that person happens to be a trans person or if that person happens to be in a place where workplace protections are not added, are not included, legal in that state. What good is marriage? What good is the right to marry a somebody, to create a family, if you are denied that right just to make a living? I mean, what value is the right to form a family if you don't have the right to support that family? Okay, and furthermore, I wish guys like Fred would understand, would dig a little deeper, and I'm not taking issue with his argument. I mean, sure, it makes you feel better to know that you can get married, but for God's sakes, these kids, before they ever worry about who they're going to marry, what's the first thing they do long before they're even planning to get to the altar? No, they want to get a job. Job, J-O-B. Before you can get a have a wedding, you got to be able to pay for it. You got to be able to have a car, a place to live, a place to build that family, a way to provide for it. You got to have an engine before you put in the fancy CD player and the turbocharged exhausts. First, you got to have an engine and four wheels and a steering wheel. You got to be able to pay for it. And that's where guys like Fred Saints always run into trouble. And please, this is not an attack on Fred Saints. I think he's a great guy. I've met him. This is not a bashing session on Fred Saints at all. I am simply saying that there's a certain amount of tunnel vision that goes in here when you're not making the connection between before you worry about when that kid, when we're talking about LGBT youth, that kid is going to come up against discrimination in the workplace, in hiring, long before they ever worry about whether or not they can get married. So when you're talking about kids, trying to equate marriage with these kids and what's going to make them feel better? No, you know what's going to make these kids feel better, Fred? Is being able to go to a job every day. To be able to keep that job. Not to be singled out for discrimination because they're LGBT. Okay? And they're going to encounter that long before they ever worry about how, if, or when, or who they're going to be getting married. You know? I mean, I think, and again, this is not an attack on Fred Saints. I am not, I'm, if anything, I am accusing him of a little bit of tunnel vision. Okay? Not saying his argument doesn't have merit. I'm saying it's incomplete. I'm saying if all you do, if you think that that just knowing you can get married someday is really going to make kids feel wonderful and better about themselves when they go down to the local store to apply for their job and the guy behind the counter says, fuck you, faggot, get out. You really think that knowing that someday he could get married is going to make him feel better? I'm sorry, I disagree. I think that kid is going to feel a lot worse about the fact that he lives in a state or a county or a city that doesn't treat him as an equal or her as an equal, that looks at them and says, because of something that has absolutely nothing to do with the kind of person you are, because of something that has nothing to do with the kind of work that you have, with the skills that you have, with the knowledge that you have, because of that, we will not even allow you to flip burgers at the local Greasy Spoon. Okay? And I'm sorry, but I think that's a little more basic than whether or not you can file joint tax returns. I'm sorry, I do. I think it's more basic. Because here's the fact. And, you know, some people in Washington, some of these D.C. elite gay people may not want to understand this. They may not want to hear it. Or maybe they do understand it, and they're simply not focusing on it. And I am not including the Human Rights Campaign, because I'll tell you something. The Human Rights Campaign, and I've said this a number of times on the show, the Human Rights Campaign has been doing some excellent work around ENDA, and they deserve credit for it. But where the fuck were you in 2009, dudes? Where were you when we needed you? Where were you when we had a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate and a Democrat in the White House? You guys were nowhere to be found. You were too busy hawking for don't ask, don't tell. I mean, I'm sorry, but this still comes under the heading of HRC cleaning up their own mess. And you know what? They've been making an effort, but they've done so much damage in the past that the hole they've dug in the interest of promoting marriage is so deep that now they're having trouble getting out of it. And when someone like Fred Sains tries to equate marriage with self-worth as an LGBT person, I say, excuse me, but I think you need to take a little bit longer look at what's really going on in this community outside the Beltway. You need to get on a plane, and you don't need to fly to Los Angeles or New York. You need to fly to Montgomery, Alabama. You need to fly to Cincinnati and Cleveland. You need to fly to Pennsylvania. You need to fly out to Utah and Idaho and Indiana and all those places where there are no big urban gay centers, where there aren't lots of big gay wealthy money, where there isn't lots of money-driven politicians who only give a shit about LGBT people when there's money to be made from us. Okay? If you really want to tune in, if you really want to serve the community, if you really want to be representative of where this community is, you need to get out of Chicago, New York, and L.A. and Washington, and you need to start looking in the places where people are being thrown out of their homes because they're gay, places where people are losing jobs because somebody sees a picture of a couple on the internet. You need to start looking into the places that don't host your multi-bazillion dollar galas that are attended by politicians. You need to look into the little places. You need to look into the places where discrimination isn't just a happenstance, where it sometimes happens, but where it's the norm. That's what you need to do, HRC. You need to get out of that DC bubble and take this on the road. And not take it on the road and go marriage, marriage, marriage like you've done the last zillion times. You need to go out there and start looking about what is it like. You want to talk to LGBT youth? Don't just talk to LGBT youth in Washington and New York. Talk to LGBT youth in Cincinnati. Talk to LGBT youth in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Talk to LGBT youth in Idaho, in Montana, in Wyoming, in places like that, where it's still legal to throw you out of your home because you're queer, where it's still legal to fire you or just refuse you a job because you're not straight or because you're not conventionally gendered. That's where you need to go, HRC. And you can't. Until you do that, and until you have that level of understanding, which you clearly don't seem to yet, I mean, you know, this is one of those things. Ignorance is curable. This is curable. I mean, this is not something that you could say, you know, just because HRC hasn't done so well in the past, and I am the first one, as you well know, to criticize them when I think they deserve it. But you need to, if you want to be part of the community, if you really want to represent the community, you got to represent all the community. Not just the community in Washington, not just the community as the politicians perceive it. You know, you need to dig some deeper. And again, I want to be careful. This is not an HRC bash session. But every time that I hear one of these guys try to make it to say, well, you know, they really understand about equality from marriage. Oh, no, they don't. You know what really makes you feel equal? Having money in your pocket, being able to go to work every day, feeling like, you know, you could buy your own car, like, you know, you have your own apartment, that you could support yourself. Okay? And I'm sorry, but that is far, far more basic, as particularly for an LGBT youth, than anything involving marriage. And until you get that, HRC, you're always going to be on the outside and behind where the rest of the community really is. Catch up, HRC. You've made a good start. Catch up. You're still not quite there yet. We see you making an effort. And that is a good effort. And I am the first one to cheer it on because I think it's long overdue. So please don't write me and tell me, oh, you're just bashing HRC. I get these letters all the time. Okay. I'm not. Because I think what they've been doing, they made some efforts. They've been making some efforts here around ENDA. I think they're terrific. I think they're to be commended. I think it is absolutely commendable for what they have done. But you know what? When you try to say, oh, well, what the Supreme Court did was send a message. No, it didn't. We got that message. That's not message received. Because the kid that just didn't get the job because he's gay or trans doesn't receive that message. The kid that goes to all those fast food restaurants and retail stores and not one of them will hire her because she's trans, she's not getting that message, Fred. She isn't worried about getting married. She's worried about putting gas in her car. Do you get that? Because until you get that, until you understand where the community is, this is the post-Bush era. A lot of us can't get jobs. It is hard enough when times are good for LGBT people to find work. It is next to impossible now. If you don't have a college degree, if you're not already well-established before you come out, okay? But, you guys have to show that you get that. You guys have to show that you understand that without the ability to earn a living, the right to marry doesn't mean shit. You need to show people that you understand that. That marriage is what the icing on the cake is. It is not the cake. You guys need to understand that, and you need to understand it and show that you understand it, because it is the only way you are going to get anyone else to trust you. You want to be trusted? You want to regain the trust of this community, our HRC? How about you start showing that you get it? And the first thing you can do to show that you get it is to stop drawing these false equivalencies between marriage and equality. Marriage does not equal equality. Equality equals equality. Economics. Don't talk to me about how you're equal because somebody who makes $10,000 a year and somebody who makes $150,000 a year both have the right to marry. Talk to me about when the person making $10,000 a year has the same opportunity to make $150,000 a year if they apply themselves and if they do what they have to do within the sphere of the work that they are doing in order to do that. That's what equality is. In this climate, in this economy, economic equality has to come first. And anyone who tells you otherwise is selling you a line, is spinning you. And I'm sure that's not what Fred was trying to do there. But that's what it sure sounded like. And so this is not an attack. It's an encouragement. Get off your high horses. Get on that Amtrak. Get the fuck out of D.C. and start checking out what's going on in the rest of the country, because it's a hell of a lot different than what you guys are seeing inside. There's a whole nother country out here, and it's time that you guys started becoming a part of that. If you want to represent us, the first thing you need to do is understand us. And when you release a piece like that, when you have a quote like that, what I read out of that is that you still don't get it. You're trying, but you still really don't get what people are about. And I don't want to keep rehashing, okay, because I've gone on long enough about this topic. But the reality is, before you worry about buying flowers and where you're going on the honeymoon and what kind of canapes you're going to have at the reception, first, for a lot of people, you got to worry about, how am I going to put gas in my car and pay the rent this week? And when you get that, when you understand that, and that's where these LGBT youth that you say you want to support are, that's where the trans people that you say you want to support are, when you start to get that, then maybe you'll be able to step into a legitimate role as a spokesperson, as a spokes organization, but not 1 minute before. Build the bridges, HRC. Draw the connection. Represent the real community, not your image of what you would like it to be, because that's not the reality. The reality is we're not all making six figures and we're not all donating 50 grand a year to the human rights campaign like your executive board. Okay? Most of us are struggling. A lot of us are making crap. A lot of us are barely getting by. And in this economy, the jobs are not there. Very often, we are last hired, first fired. You need to show that you understand that. All right. I said I was going to shut up about this, and I'm going to do that. We only have four more minutes before we go to our final. Okay. Oh, we've got some Dana International coming up, but before we get to that, we got another couple of minutes. I said I was going to stop talking about this, but, you know, I get on a roll with the human rights campaign. And you know, I'm in this zone right now where, you know, I've spent all these years talking negatively about the human rights campaign and bashing them and all and doing all this stuff. And now they're doing stuff that I like, that I've been happy to see, that I've been wanting to see from them literally for probably a generation. You know, well, I haven't been around for a generation as a trans woman, but it's certainly the last 10 years. You know, and I'm like torn because it's exciting to see them making an effort. And I'm so enthused. Like, for example, what they did with Lisa Murkowski, that letter writing campaign, that postcard campaign that helped her change her vote. I thought that was awesome. That is exactly the kind of thing HRC should be doing. Exactly the kind of thing. Put your money into it. Show us why we need the human rights campaign on our side. Show us what you can do. And this was a perfect example of it. And they get full credit from me for doing it. And I've said it again. I'll say it 100 times. You have to give full credit where credit is due, because if not, then you have no credibility when you're complaining about stuff. And so I give full credit to the human rights campaign for doing that. But you also got to remember that marriage is the icing on the cake. It is not the cake. The cake is what's built out of a good job, a stable home, a strong family, a close community, people that support each other, the self-knowledge that your gender identity or your sexual orientation is not going to cost you your job if the guy that your boss happens to come in a bad mood one day and decide to be a bigot and take it out on you. Okay? And all that happens long before anybody says, hey, you know, let's get married. Unless, of course, you're super wealthy and these issues aren't important to you. And, I mean, I hate to keep bringing it up, but the more we see this stuff, the more we see evidence that the decisions at the Human Rights Campaign are being made by people who don't get it. Who have the money to donate 50 grand a year, to just sign off a check and figure that that's their activism, and then they get a vote on the human rights campaign agenda. Well, when you have people who are that wealthy, who are that detached from the issues of the working class, well, what do you expect? And that's the point. You know, I would love to see HRC allow a few, instead of giving the ability to vote to whoever has the deepest wallets, how about you give some of those votes, at least some of those votes, not all, I'm not saying nobody should have, but at least some of those votes to those who are the most respected activists, to those who have done the work, not written the checks. Because I'll tell you what, at least in my book, that would earn you a lot more respect. Have the experts making the decisions rather than the people who have the biggest donation records. Because when you get people who are focused on money, well, what you get is what we've seen over the last 30 years. Selfish, self-centered, self-focused. That's what you get. You get what we witnessed. What we witnessed in 2004, what we witnessed in 2007, what we witnessed in the 90s. Well, when you're all about money, when everything is made by, when all the decisions are made by the richest people, that's what's going to happen. So take some of those seats. Make it for the people who have earned the right to make votes on these things, who have not paid for those votes, but have earned those votes through their skill and their leadership. How about that? All right. I have blathered on long enough. We have to go to a break here. So we've got Data International. This is called, what is it called? It's from Eurovision. Ding dong. And we will be back in a couple.
Wait until the war is over, and we're both a little older. The unknown soldier.
It's the Rebecca Giroir Show. And, of course, that was the classic Doors. Oh, my goodness. Jim Morrison.
Jim lives. At least on this show, he does.
Well, here's a little Doors trivia for you.
Really?
Did you know that, of course, from the classic song, I forget which name of the song, but there's this line that says, Mr. Mojo Rison?
Yes.
Mr. Mojo Rison, of course, is an anagram for Jim Morrison.
Oh, well, of course it is. But I didn't know that before. Where did you find that out?
I read the book. There's this book called No One Here Gets Out Alive, which is all about the story of the Doors. And I read that thing cover to cover. And it turns out what they said was that while, of course, you know, it's supposedly well-established fact that Morrison died in Paris, and there's a tombstone and the whole nine yards.
Well, there's controversy about his death.
Right.
Suicide, murder, what do you think about that?
Well, what they said in the book was they said that he was found dead in a Paris hotel, that the doctor who signed the death certificate was not registered in any French physician registry. They couldn't find who the doctor was.
Oh.
And that Morrison himself had said for several years previous that he said, one day I'm just going to disappear and I'm going to fake my own death.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And he said, and what he said was that the way you would know he was coming back was he would send out a note from Mr. Mojo Rison. And so, needless to say, we have not gotten that note yet. Now, bear in mind, we're talking pretty much closing in on 40 years since Morrison's death now. But, yeah, I mean, it's I mean, who knows? I mean, you know, he may have very well just decided, you know what, I'm done. He was that kind of person. And who knows? He may be living on a, you know, tropical island somewhere. Who the hell knows? For all we know, could be hanging out in an alleyway in Venice, California, for all we know. I mean, he could be, you know. But in any case, all right, enough about the Doors. Let's talk about, you know, that LGBT stuff. But in any case, so talking about the military, talking about trans discrimination, as we often do on this show. And I wanted to cover another story tonight, which I thought this was just crazy. Apparently, there's a trans woman. Now, this comes to us from Clearwater, Florida. Always the most, you know, not exactly the most liberal place on the planet. But there's this Clearwater, Florida Technical College for allegedly forcing a transgender nursing student to use a storage closet as her bathroom. They threatened to press charges if she used the women's restroom. We've got a news report on this. Mr. Mike, why don't you run that?
Basically told that I can't use the women's restroom and I can't use the men's restroom. And the only restroom I was given access to at that time was a storage room that did not lock from the inside.
She says she was told if she used the regular bathrooms on campus, charges would be filed against her, even though she'd already used the women's bathroom for months.
I lost sleep. I was constantly crying about it.
Now the American Civil Liberties Union is involved. Attorney Daniel Tilley has written this letter to the superintendent of the Pinellas County School Board asking the school to comply with federal law, saying this is sex discrimination.
We're certainly happy to work with them to develop policies that are appropriate.
I honestly felt singled out. I felt like everyone was against me. I felt alone.
Yeah. Now, you know, you would think, now bear in mind, this is Florida, needless to say, there's no law that protects transgender people, or gay people for that matter, from discrimination in the state of Florida. Some areas do have local protections, but unfortunately those are far and few between. There are some areas, Key West, a few other places, but unfortunately there is no state law protecting these folks. And of course, since we can't get our Congress in the last generation or so to pass a federal law, you know, there's nothing to protect people like this. So this discrimination is unfortunately perfectly legal. That's, to me, it's kind of sad. Now, this is somebody who was not doing anything immoral, had not been caught doing anything questionable. She was just going to the bathroom. Nobody noticed. Nobody paid any attention until somebody brought it up. So basically, what this is going on is, say, when in doubt, discriminate. That's the way, you know. I mean, of course, when you have a backward state like Florida involved, this is the kind of thing that happens. Now, what I think is most interesting about this is that this ACLU lawyer is apparently relying on the EEOC, the Employment Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's ruling that anti-transgender discrimination is sex discrimination under federal law, under the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So obviously, Mr. Tilley, the ACLU lawyer, is relying on that. And to me, this is very interesting because I think it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the courts. And if this ruling by the EEOC actually has teeth, or if states are just going to ignore it. because this is a prime example right here of the kind of thing that you allow when you don't have a law protecting these people. You can treat them any way you want. You could make them go pee in a storage closet because there's no law that says they can't. I mean, it's disgraceful. It's absolutely disgraceful. And what about the obligation of this college? Personally, what I think is, I think that this college should be obligated to return every nickel of tuition and to help pay for her to transfer to a school where they have human beings who will treat her like human beings. I mean, seriously. I mean, that's what I mean. I know that's probably not going to happen in a Southern District Court. But you know what? I think, as far as I can see, if the EEOC ruling has any meaning at all, I can't see how she doesn't win this. You know, now, again, I say this all the time on the air. I want to make it clear once yet again, I am not a lawyer. Am not a lawyer. Now, what I am going to tell you is that after this show, I am going to be getting in touch with someone who actually is a lawyer, who we haven't had on the show yet, but I've been wanting to have on the show for a long time. I've actually spoken to him. I spoke to him when I met him in California. I want to get Mason Davis on the show. Mason Davis, of course, who is the executive director of the Transgender Law Center out in San Francisco. Good guy. I don't know if you caught him last week with Mara Kiesling on, I forget which show it was. Who was the host? I don't remember. Anyway, they were both on MSNBC talking about Bradley Manning. You know, and of course, Mason is great. I love Mason. I mean, Mara, of course, I mean, we love Mara. Mara's on the show all the time. We're going to be having her on again very, very soon, probably within the next couple of weeks, I would think. I'm going to send over to NCT and all Vincent over there, have him set that up for us. But I've been wanting to have Mason on for a while. I mean, I remember when they had the Arizona law that was going on with the guy with that idiot who was trying to make it a crime for trans people to use the wrong bathroom. Remember that one?
Sure do, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, Mason was the one who made the greatest point, the one that I try to make all the time, where he said, you know, I mean, everybody's worried about and I'm obviously totally, completely, utterly paraphrasing here to the point of ridiculousness. I'm just basically rehashing his point. Where he said, you know how, you know, everybody complains about, you know, trans women going into the ladies' room. Well, how do you think women are going to feel about a guy who, like Mason, for example, or like Ethan St. Pierre, you know, a burly guy with a beard and a hairy chest and, a you know, walking into the ladies' room? Because that's what you're going to want to require. I mean, that's the part of this that I think all these people who get freaked out, they don't, somehow this doesn't key in for them. That what you're doing is the flip side of what you're doing. If you're going to ban trans women from ladies' room, well, then what you're doing is you're requiring that trans men use the ladies' room. But nobody seems to care about that, and I don't get that. You want to force, I mean, now, of course, needless to say, it should be needless to say, especially you folks, I mean, a trans man is no more of a threat in a bathroom than a trans woman. We know that. But, you know, the logic doesn't make any sense here. There's no logical thread running through this argument. I mean, it's like what? Penis equals threat? Or even once had a penis equals threat? I mean, where exactly is the logic here? I mean, whatever happened to the country where they said, we judge you on your behavior? You commit a crime, you go to jail. You break the law, you're held to account for it. But we don't accuse you of shit you haven't done. We don't judge you by your race. We don't judge you by your religion. We don't judge you by your ethnicity. We don't judge you by your sexual orientation or your gender identity. We don't put you in jail based on those things. What we judge you on is what you personally as an individual do and say, and the acts that you commit and you are responsible for. I mean, don't forget, this is a country with a history. We've learned from our experiences, whether it's slavery, how about the internment camps where we held Japanese citizens during World War II, simply because we jailed them because of their ethnicity. No other reason. These people were not criminals. We learned. We don't do shit like that anymore because we've grown up as a nation. We don't do shit like that anymore. Well, except for Guantanamo, but that's another story.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah, well, you know, that at least there was at least some kind of an argument that these people, I mean, granted, it's becoming less and less credible every day, every minute. But at least there was some argument to be made that the reason these people were arrested in the first place was because they were in places and situations where it was felt that they were possibly acting as terrorists. That there was some kind of justification, flimsy as it may be, but at least there was some kind of reason why they were arrested and put in this place in the first place. With the Japanese, there wasn't. It was just, you're Japanese, you're going in here. I mean, you know, that was just, you know, they judge people by ethnicity, strictly. And that was it. Folks, we've learned our lesson from this crap, but yet we're still doing it. It's still okay to judge somebody and say, you know, I fear this person, because that's what they're doing. That's really what they're doing. When you boil down all the bullshit with the political muckety-muck crap, with all that, when you boil all that away, when you strip all that crap away, what they're really arguing is because you were born with a penis and you wear a dress, you are therefore a threat. You are therefore more likely to commit a crime, a sexual assault in a bathroom, than somebody who is not. That's what it boils down to. It is bigotry, plain and simple. I mean, if you're going to judge people, if you are going to judge someone who, let's say, and I'm making this stuff up. Let's say you have a situation with a gentleman, with a person, I shouldn't say a gentleman, but although it's usually men, but let's say you have a situation with a guy who has a record of sexual assault, somebody who's committed such a crime. Well, then it would be reasonable to say, hey, we should track that guy. Hey, maybe it's a good idea not to give this guy a job in which he's in close quarters with the kind of people who he sexually assaulted before. Maybe it's a good idea to restrict or track his movements. Maybe it's, you know, I mean, there's arguments to be made. But is it credible? I mean, look at how we speak out. I'll give you another example. When the NYPD, when the New York Police Department started tracking Muslims in New Jersey and in Long Island and in other areas outside of New York City, just because they're Muslim and they think, well, there might be terrorists, right? Look at Stop and Frisk, where cops are going out of their way and arresting or harassing people of color mainly because they're people of color. In other words, profiling. Okay? We get all up in arms about that, and rightly so, and it's a big deal, and we speak out against it, and we feel it's unfair, right? But yet that's exactly what is going on here. That's exactly what it is, where politicians are saying, well, because this person happens to be transgender, they're more likely to be a threat for sexual assault. Even though there is not the slightest provable evidence, there is not even a single case of what they are saying is a threat. that, oh, somebody, some guy, some sexual predator is going to get dressed up as a woman to walk into the ladies' room. Or the Fox News one. Have you heard this one? The one where they say, oh, well, what if a student says he wants to go into the girls' room and says, I feel like a girl today? It's like, what planet are you people living on? But yet this shit gets credibility. I mean, that's what kills me. And it gets credibility in places you think would know better, like New York State, like Maryland, like Massachusetts. I mean, I'm sorry. I've said this a number of times, and I will continue to say it until the law is changed. But what Massachusetts has as a non-discrimination law is not a non-discrimination law. It's a law that makes it illegal to discriminate in employment only. It is a law that permits discrimination in housing, in public accommodations, in bathroom use. It is a discriminatory law. It is not an anti-discrimination law. It simply maps out for people who want to discriminate where all the various ways that they can legally discriminate are. It does not protect anyone from anything. It really does not. And that's the problem. Okay? Because, yeah, you know what? In places like Boston and in a lot of the Massachusetts area, certainly the areas of Massachusetts that I've been in, folks are like, in a lot of ways, they're like New Jersey. They don't really have a problem with that much. I mean, yeah, sure, there are always some, but, you know, there's not as much. But you know what? The reality is if somebody wants to deny me a hotel room in the state of New York or in Massachusetts, or in Maryland, because I'm trans, it's perfectly legal. I can be refused service in a restaurant in any one of those states. I can be refused a drink in a bar. I mean, seriously, that's what you call equality? I don't think so. No, that does not match the description of the word equality. It does not match the definition in my dictionary. I'm sorry, but calling what Massachusetts has equality is just not credible. Okay? I mean, I'll be honest with you. In a lot of ways, what we have even in areas where we have laws is not really equality because people are always going to look at you funny. You're always going to be last hired and first fired. There are still problems. There are problems right here in the state of New Jersey. Believe me, I can tell you. But at least we've got a baseline. At least there is a law that says this is illegal. I mean, at least there's a standard being set, even if it's not always followed. Even if not every single place is going to follow that, there is a line that says somewhere specifically, we don't allow that kind of treatment of our citizens here. Do you know what I'm saying? Seriously. Okay? Unfortunately, what you have in Massachusetts is you say, well, you can't use a person's gender identity as an excuse not to hire them. Well, that's great, but how do you prove that? But realistically, and Mara Kiesling argued against this, but I am not as confident as she is that she's correct, that said, basically, I think you could definitely come up with a situation, and even if it wasn't completely legitimate, I bet you there would be people that would try, where you'd find a situation in Massachusetts where people would say to you, or Maryland, or New York, well, gee, honey, I'd love to hire you. But you're not allowed to use the bathroom here. You'll have to go to the bathroom down the street. Just like this woman, just like Alex Wilson in Florida, is forced to walk into another building to go to the bathroom. I could see that happening in Massachusetts, in New York, in Maryland, several other states, where they could say, yeah, you can go to school here, but you know, don't expect to use the bathroom like everyone else. Don't expect to be treated like everyone else. Don't expect to be welcome at the local bar. Don't expect to be served at the local restaurant. Don't expect to be able to rent a car or rent a hotel room or attend a presentation that you may not have any problems 90% of the time. But you know what? It's still legal for them to discriminate. It's still legal for them to single you out as a transgender person and say, no, you're not welcome. You can't have access to this thing that everyone else has. Why? Because we don't have to, and because we don't like you, and because the law allows us to express our bigotry by denying you these basic things, and the law allows that. And that, I'm sorry, that is not an anti-discrimination law. That is a map to discrimination law, is what that is. That isn't a law that prevents discrimination. It's a law that maps out for employers and landlords and hotel owners and bar owners and restaurant owners how you can discriminate against a transgender person. Can't do this, can't do that, but you can do all these other things. You know, really. I mean, I've heard stories about people in New York that when the law was passed, the anti-discrimination law in New York in 2002, the Sexual Orientation Non-Discrimination Act was passed in New York. I know of trans people that actually lost their jobs the day that law was passed or the day after when their bosses came. Well, so, oh, gee, you know, I thought it was illegal to fire you. But you know what? I just found out it's not. You're fired. Goodbye. No, I mean, seriously. I mean, I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's not. Map to discrimination laws. That's what New York has. That's what Maryland has. That's what Massachusetts has. Probably a few others that I'm not thinking of. I'm just thinking of those three because they're local. And, I mean, yeah, it's frustrating in the extreme because people don't seem to get that. And then, you know, when you see something like this, Alex Wilson, when you see something like this happening in Florida, you say to yourself, well, okay, it's the Deep South. It's a state that has no law. It's a state that doesn't protect any of us, that doesn't protect any LGBT people, has a right-wing Tea Party nut job as a governor, is mostly Republican. You know, you expect this, just like you would expect it in Mississippi and Texas and Alabama and places like that. So it's like, you know, it's almost like you almost expect it from those kind of situations. I mean, not that you want it, not that you won't fight against it, but you're almost like, yeah, big surprise. So they're acting like bigoted assholes. Gee, I'm shocked, you know? But you know what? I'm sorry. I mean, call me an idealistic idiot, but I expect better from the state of Massachusetts. I expect better from New York. I expect better from Maryland. These are the places. Okay, you know, Governor Cuomo, you want to call your state the progressive capital? How about you start acting like it? How about you start acting like a progressive? You know, you could start by remembering we exist. You know, there's an easy one for you. Start with the T word. It's easy. Only two syllables. Come on. Trans, come on. I mean, it's like, just how about we let the word cross your lips once or twice? How about you remind people that you do know that you're the only state in the Northeast left that has no protections for transgender people? How about you stop releasing lying vacation websites that lie to people that see it and tell them that all LGBT people are welcomed in New York, and don't tell them the truth, that if you're transgender, there's at least a chance that you will be denied service at a hotel, at a restaurant, And again, I'm not trying to make it and say, oh, these places are terrible and they're all filled with bigots and blah, blah, blah. Chances are 95% of the time, you're not going to have a problem. You're really not. I've traveled in all three of these states. I've had a problem in all the times I've traveled in Maryland, New York, and Massachusetts. I've encountered a problem once, back in 2004, with a group of trans people. When we were in Maryland, just outside D.C., and we sat in an Applebee's where they refused to serve us. They allowed us to sit there. They just wouldn't serve us. Perfectly legal. Maryland. On the other hand, I also went to Maryland a second time where I stayed for a week with a friend. Had a wonderful time. You would have never known that there wasn't a law. It was absolutely friendly. Of course, I was in a place called Tacoma Park, where I remember when we had Dana Byer on the show, who was very familiar with that area. She was running as a delegate for that area, and she called it a special place. She said it's even more special than it's like social, little socialism, little Cuba or something. I remember what she said. It wasn't that. I'm making that part up. But anyway, it was a very special place. All right, it looks like we are pretty much out of time. Where does it go, Mr. Mike? Where does it go? So we will be back next week. I don't know who our guest is going to be, but we'll have somebody, I'm pretty sure. I want to remind you that if you missed any part of the show, if you missed our amazing interview with Fiona Dawson or anything else that was on the show, we will be rerunning the show in about 3 minutes after a lovely musical interlude with Mr. Mike. And we will catch you all next week. I want to say thank you to Mr. Mike, as always. Thank you to Fiona Dawson for joining us and talking to us. And thank you to you for supporting this media. We will catch you all next week. Good night, everybody.
Will you marry me?
I need to go talk to them.
Fine, but I'll need an answer. I'm not going to wait for you forever.
You won.